Oh, snap.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Everyone, I am Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the host of the Raw Dog Food Truth, where friends don't feed kibble. Or we don't let friends feed kibble. We try not to. But anyway, some people still want to do that, and I guess that's okay. But we're here to just give you the information. We're here to give you the information so you smart pet parents can make decisions yourself. And we have so many people that listen to the Raw Dog Food Truth. And Dr. Judy is here with us today. Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K. And Dr. Judy Jasek, we have a lot of people that are loving the podcast. And I get a lot of great emails saying how much they appreciate all the information that we're putting out there. So thank you so much. Thank you.
No, it's my pleasure. I'm just all about education and helping people really look at things a different way and presenting a different perspective and what tends to come out mainstream. Because I think that the more educated people are, the better decisions they can make, and they're at least making more informed decisions and seeing both sides of the coin instead of just getting, you know, the typical feedback that they get from the more conventional side of medicine.
Right. Absolutely. We want to say hello to Chuck and Tina Kutzman and Katie the Bulldog. Oh my gosh. They've been sending me pictures. They are new feeders. They listen to the podcast. They came to my new feeders webinar we had last week, which incidentally, if you would like to be alerted of our next webinar, which we do have another webinar coming up, October the 23rd, I believe. You want to go to my website, rawdogfoodandco.com, and there's a little red box that's going to come out. You want to sign up for my email alerts so we can tell you when our next free webinar is, and you can get signed up. But also, we want to say hi to Ron Beal and Amy Johansson. These are some of our listeners, and we so appreciate you listening to the Raw Dog Food Truth. Today we're going to talk about antacids. How do you say it? Antacids. Oh, give me some coffee. Antacids.
I was going to say, maybe you're just a cup of coffee. You're a cup of coffee short here. In the morning.
That is for sure. I do drink a lot of coffee. Okay, so we're going to talk about that. But first, I want to ask a couple of other questions. So one of my feeders, she's been feeding raw for, oh gosh, I would say, let's say about five months. She's got several dogs, but one of her little dogs, and this dog's only three, has bad breath. Really bad breath. The others are fine. This one has bad breath. And I said, well, have you had the teeth checked? Has not had the teeth checked yet. I said, well, let's check the teeth and make sure there's not something going on in there. Any ideas why a raw-fed dog might have bad breath, Dr. Judy Jasek?
Yeah, with bad breath, I always look at the teeth. And raw feeding is definitely the best way to feed for dental health, because you're not feeding kibble is, despite all the claims about, oh, kibble, because it's hard and crunchy, it cleans the teeth. Well, think about how your teeth feel if you eat a pretzel or a cookie and you get all that, you know, it mushes together and it gets stuck under your gums, and all that. My teeth don't feel clean after I eat something dry and crumbly. That is all misinformation, and it's all marketing. The whole milk bone thing, I don't know if those commercials are still out there. I don't watch TV, but, you know, there used to be the commercials with the milk bone and the dogs with the little, you know, shiny stars on their teeth because they clean them. And that's, I mean, milk bones are full of sugar and all other crap. We don't want our dogs eating. They don't do anything to clean the teeth. That's just all marketing. So raw is still the best because it's, you know, it's naturally kind of abrasive, especially when you have the ground up bone in the blends. It's naturally abrasive. If dogs, you know, the next step, if they were eating things like, you know, the chicken necks and the raw poultry bones are great for cleaning the teeth. However, it's not, it's not going to guarantee that you're never going to have dental problems. I have two Chihuahuas and, you know, they're in every year getting anesthetized, getting dental x-rays because small dogs in particular are very prone to dental disease. And I am now brushing their teeth and, you know, doing all that, but there's still no guarantee. I mean, I go to the dentist twice a year. I get my teeth cleaned. I brush, I floss. I still get dental problems. You know, that still can happen. And when we have a bad mouth odor that doesn't go away, the first thing I'm thinking about is, do we have an infected tooth or infected tooth root? Because you can have the roots on the teeth are sometimes bigger than the teeth that you actually see. I mean, there's a lot of tooth mass below the gum line that you can't see. And the other thing is dogs will chew on things. They chew on sticks. They chew on rocks, things that can fracture their teeth. Or you could get like a hairline fracture in a tooth and you could get bacteria up in there. In fact, the root and the outside of the teeth and the gums could look perfectly healthy and you could still have an infected root. So it can be deceiving, but I have seen this over and over and over again where we have mouth odor or sometimes behavioral changes. Dogs don't want to play. They used to play with their ball. They don't want to do that. They used to play tug. They don't want to do that. It can be because their mouth hurts. And so that's another sign to get the dogs in. And you have to get the x-rays done. And it does require anesthesia. And there's just no way around that. And you can't get, there's just no way to do dental x-rays on a dog or a cat without anesthetizing them. They're not going to hold still and put the little, you know, bite wings in their mouth. Like when we go to the dentist, it's the same procedure. It just, you know, the dentist tells you to hold still and they take the radiograph, but you can't do that with a dog or cat. They have to be anesthetized. And it's just important you go to a place. I actually recommend going to dental specialists anymore because their level of expertise is much higher and this is all they do. So when it comes to anesthetic safety, they anesthetize every single patient that they see. So they're very good. They're geared up for this. They have technicians dedicated to monitoring anesthesia, and I think they have the safest anesthesia techniques as well as the additional dental expertise. And as far as interpreting the x-rays and then what would be the best thing to do for the mouth. But yeah, with mouth odor, I would say without a doubt, go in, get the full anesthesia, get the x-rays taken and find out what's going on. Cause there's a good chance that there's a dental problem.
Yeah, that's what. And two, you know, another great indicator is when you feed raw. So in the grinds that we have, the blends, they're going to be, number one, frozen when they go into the refrigerator. When they thaw out, they're still going to be cold. And I always say, hey, if your dog's backing away from something cold or they're not wanting to eat a duck foot or a duck head or something like that, that could be an indication that their teeth hurt. So we can't know if a dog has been on a high sugary diet for a long time, if their teeth have been impacted or their teeth have been affected by all that sugar. So I always say, let's try warming the food and see if that is better. Maybe they have sensitive teeth. So good idea. One other question. Now, I do know there's anesthesia. I can't speak today. I just can't.
It's the A word. Antacids, anesthesia. Say apple.
Echo. No. oh, my. But so you're saying that there are these clinics where they do anesthesia free. But you don't find that those are very effective for dogs, right? Or when they're cleaning their teeth.
No, I don't think they're effective at all. First of all, I don't think they can do a very good job of actually cleaning the teeth because they're awake. And then, you know, I mean, I've cleaned a lot of dogs' teeth. And when you have a dog that's awake and moving around, you can't get in there and do a very good job, especially on the inside surfaces of the teeth. And I think it's just very misleading because, again, you are not able to look at the roots. And a lot of the hidden disease is hiding there in the tooth roots. So if you're going to get the procedure done, do the full deal. Do the anesthesia free, unless, you know, it's an animal that just has health reasons, absolutely cannot be anesthetized, anesthesia free, maybe better than nothing. The other problem is if there's a painful tooth, you know, if you've ever been at the dentist and been zinged by a, you know, probe or something in a sensitive tooth spot, that's another risk. If you have a dog with really bad dental disease, or cats tend to get these, we call neck lesions, where the teeth decay right at the gum line and you end up with exposed root, and you hit one of those spots, man, they're painful. And, you don't want to be subjecting your pet to that. Where if they're anesthetized, you take the x-rays, you see what exactly is going on. And that's just the best way to go. So now I really don't advocate the anesthesia free unless it's just a, you know, last resort. The animal just absolutely cannot be sedated for some health reason.
Got it. And I will say, I have a horror story, my own. So dachshund, 11 years old. I had three dachshunds. This was my 11-year-old dachshund that I rescued, and he was in such bad shape when I rescued him. He had heartworms. He, you know, we had to do the treatment. Unfortunately, he almost died. But I took him in to get his teeth clean, and the vet called and said, "Listen, we need to take out 8 teeth." I said, 8 teeth? Seriously? I said, is this a life or death situation? You really need to take out 8 teeth? And of course, you know, they said, look, these little dogs, you know, it can be bad for their health if you don't take the teeth out. I said, okay. And it was going to be like $900, something like that. I mean, it was expensive. I said, okay, that's fine. Take them out. They called me an hour later and they said, we don't think he's going to make it. And I was like, what? And they said, we can't wake him back up from the anesthesia. So I ran up there and I said, let me just see him. And they still had him all hooked up. And it was the weirdest thing. I have never, ever felt like an out-of-body experience. And that one time, I literally felt my body, like I was coming out of my body and looking down on my little, Neo was his name. And, and he died. And so that was really, and you know what, I think things like this do happen, whether he was under too long, whether there was some sort of compromise situation from his bad health that he was in. I know this dog had been, severely malnourished and he had been beaten. There were all these things that had happened, to this dog prior to me getting him, but yeah, so he did not make it. So I know that can happen from time to time. But the vet, he just cried along with me. It was very sad. So I couldn't be mad at them, you know, and I didn't blame them. These things just happen, right? Sometimes things don't go right.
Mm-hmm. They do. I mean, they do happen. I think the real key to anesthesia safety is monitoring. And I know there's a lot of fear out there around anesthesia, especially when pets get older. And age is not a reason not to do this. My little dogs are going to be 13 and I need to call, and one of them's due to go in. I'm going to call and make the appointment and I'm going to get his teeth checked because it's really important, especially as I get older. I don't want poor dental health compromising his quality of life. So I'm going to take him in, and I have full confidence in where I take him that they do the absolute best and safest anesthesia. But the key is in the monitoring. And this is a question to ask. If you're going to take your pet in for a procedure and you're concerned about anesthesia, ask, how do they monitor? They should have, you know, devices hooked up. They should be monitoring EKG. They should have a technician dedicated to monitoring anesthesia. I know what it's like. I've owned a busy clinic. You have a day, you're short-staffed, your techs are multitasking, everybody's doing the best they can, but sometimes the anesthesia is not monitored as closely as it could be. So you want to make sure that you know, that pet should be wired up to, like I said, EKG. They should be monitoring oxygen levels, because there's things that start to change before the pet's in trouble. And if you're on top of that, you can make adjustments sooner. Now, in the case of your dog, Dee Dee, do things just sometimes go wrong inexplicably, even though everything was done in the best possible way? Yeah, it does happen. This is medicine. You know, you hear about these stories with people too. But I am giving pointers to help reduce the risk as much as possible. And I think if not doing dental care just because of the fear of anesthesia could really negatively impact the pet's quality of life. And those true, like, inexplicable, you know, anesthesia incidents are actually quite rare if everything else is done properly. Another huge thing, and I just want to put this out there because I see this happen a lot, don't get vaccines when you're getting anesthesia. Do not let your pet be vaccinated. It's so commonly done. The pet's laying there, they're sedated, great time to just pump them full of all their vaccines. I've heard about this being done without owner consent, and I think that's one of the big causes of quote-unquote anesthetic reactions. We're pumping these other medications like vaccines into the pet. They react to that. They don't, you know, they have a harder time, you know, with the anesthesia. So there's a lot of, I think, safety things to be aware of to make anesthesia safe. But I think, and I heard it said once, there is no such thing as safe anesthesia. There is safe anesthetist. Can you say that word, Dee Dee?
Anesthesis.
That's good. One more cup of coffee, and you'll have it down.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, okay. But anyway, this goes back to the monitoring. The person that's running the anesthesia, you know, those safety factors need to be in place, and it can, by far the majority of the time, be done safely.
Yeah, and I will say this, that we have had Asta's teeth cleaned. So from that incident, I have not said, okay, I will never ever have, you know, my dog's teeth cleaned again. If you guys want to talk to Dr. Judy Jasek, thank God her name's in J's today. you can find her at drjudyholisticvet.com or cancer-vet.com. By the way, I met your sister-in-law last night.
Elizabeth. Yeah,
I did. I met your sister-in-law. And it's funny because I just assume that people know our relationship. And so one of our customers who has a consult with you this week, and we were talking about the liver enzyme thing, and your sister-in-law was like, now, how do you know Dr. Judy? You know, I said, well, we do a podcast every week. So, she was like, oh, great. So I was accepted after that. After I said, we do a podcast. Okay. All right. I like you.
Okay. You're one of the clan. Yeah.
Yep. We will accept you. All right. So let's talk about, oh my gosh, it's an A word. Antacids. Aunt Essence.
Yay.
I pictured when you said it, I pictured a little ant. You know, a little ant walking around so I could say it. Aunt Acids, because there are many vets that put dogs on Aunt Acids and then they come over to the raw diet and they may not do so well on the raw diet with Aunt Acids. So the first thing I want to ask you is, why do vets put dogs on Aunt Acids? And then what's the typical name of an antacid that a vet would put a dog on?
Well, I think that the main reason they're put on it is they have some sort of digestive upset. Dogs, you know, I'll see sometimes that dogs have a tendency to vomit in the morning on an empty stomach. And these are typically kibble-fed dogs. I don't see this, rarely do I see this in dogs fed raw, because dogs are carnivores. They should be able to fast. You know, in the wild, they should be able to go a couple of days without eating. So I think this gastric irritation is secondary to the kibble, but then they will give an antacid, and I'll kind of throw some names out there, such as Pepcid, Tagamet. You know, you can just buy them over the counter, and that's commonly recommended. I'll go get some Pepcid and see. And a lot of times it does help symptomatically. It helps, you know, the acid reduction reduces the irritation in the tissues, but there's another layer there. Well, where is this irritation coming from? And I think it's more likely it's coming from the diet, something the dog's eating, some other medication the dog might be on, some other supplement that's causing this digestive upset, and then decreasing the acid, so effectively raising the pH, where it literally stops the acid production, or slows it down, doesn't stop it completely, inhibits it. That does reduce the irritation, but it's just a band-aid effect, really. You're not getting to the root of the problem.
All right. So what is the name of a typical an acid that a vet might prescribe?
A Pepcid is one, Tagamet, Omeprazole, that's like one of the drug names. I'm trying to think of the actual, I'm slipping my mind, the actual drug name for, you know, Pepcid, like the common over-the-counter. I mean, I guess sometimes you might see them like on Tums or something like that. I don't see that as often. Those are acid neutralizers more, like they get in there and they just, like they give you to baking, say that tummy ache and you take baking soda, it neutralizes the acid. So things like Tums are more acid neutralizers, so it would have more of a short-term effect, whereas these others, they actually call them proton pump inhibitors. So you'll hear, you know, sometimes you're reading about the more of the physiology behind this, they call them PPIs, as they're proton pump inhibitors, which is how the acid is produced and delivered into the stomach, and it's inhibiting that process. The problem is anytime you inhibit a process in the body, you are inhibiting typically enzymatic reactions. And this, even, you know, other drugs like anti-inflammatories, this is like, why are anti-inflammatories bad for the stomach? Well, when they inhibit inflammation, there's similar enzymatic reactions in the stomach that protect the stomach. And so whenever you're inhibiting a process in the body, you're going to be inhibiting other processes in the body that use those same metabolic processes, same enzymes. And these are where the side effects come from. So anytime, the way I look at it, anytime you're stopping a natural process in the body, you need to be super careful because you're disrupting, you know, Mother Nature has it down, you know, like the way the body is designed, it's designed to work efficiently. It's it's when we interfere with these natural processes that we tend to have problems. And this is with the antacids, you're disrupting this natural digestive process. So if there's something off with that process, we need to go back to, again, what's throwing it off in the first place, and not just throwing the Band-Aid on the situation.
Yeah. So what what would be causing? Well, first of all, here's what I hear. Let me just say this. So pet parents will get on the raw diet and they will say, my dog is licking his teeth. He's licking his teeth and he's running outside and he's eating grass. So I know that he has an upset stomach. So I need to go to my vet and put him on an antacid. So, okay, that may be true. That may or may not be true. I don't know. But what would you say to a pet parent who's seeing this in their dog, and what would be the better route for them to take?
Well, if this is starting, like, you know, I mean, my first question would be, was the dog doing this before raw, or did it just start when we started feeding the raw? If it started, you know, after the raw was being fed, then I would say we need to give the body a chance to adjust, because it's a very different digestive process. The body, and it's a huge metabolic shift. We've talked about this before on other podcasts, that we are giving the body something very, very different to digest and assimilate. And even though ultimately it's going to be a good thing, it's still an adjustment. And in fact, some dogs will go through a detox. So if you started feeding raw and your dog, you know, started chewing at feet, well, the dogs will try to detox sometimes through the skin. And they've been eating kibble. They've been eating so many chemicals and God knows what, you know, I mean, eating all this stuff that's not good for them. And now we're giving them good nutrition and the body's like, oh, let's get rid of all this stuff we don't need. We're getting good stuff now. Let's get rid of all this stuff we don't need. And they will sometimes detox through the gut. So we get diarrhea, or sometimes through the skin. The skin is the largest organ in the body. And sometimes we will see detox reactions in the skin, that, and if that's what it is, then that should subside. You know, these symptoms should only last for probably no more than a couple of weeks at the most. And then things should start to settle down, and then you start to see an improvement. I mean, you'll see, I mean, the skin, when a dog goes from kibble to raw, the skin goes through a complete transformation, you know, skin and hair coat. I mean, I have one of my little dogs, I rescued him and he was a year old, and he, you know, he was from a rescue. So they have to feed whatever they have. And I started him on raw. he wouldn't even touch his kibble after his first raw meal. He was like, oh no, they gave me some of whatever they'd been feeding him. And he's like, I'm not eating that stuff again. But there was a while there where if you looked at his hair coat, you would have thought, what's wrong with him? And I knew he was just blowing his coat. He was getting rid of all that old dead hair, was just coming out. And then, you know, you could see the new coat starting to grow in. So it's a huge shift for the body. And during that time, you are going to see changes. So I think it depends on how severe the symptoms are. You know, we don't want the pet suffering during this process, or having, you know, diarrhea in the house, you know, things like that. I'll sometimes recommend adding in like a little bit of pumpkin, just a little extra fiber. Pumpkin is actually very nourishing for the gut. It helps support normal gut motility. And sometimes adding just a little bit of that extra fiber in will help get them through the process. If they're really struggling, you know, these are pets that have had like a history of gut issues, and it's just taking them longer to adapt. You know, maybe we need to do some things like add in some, you know, a little bit of cooked meat, or maybe like lightly cook a blend or something. I mean, those are things that I don't like to make blanket recommendations about, because we need to look at, you know, the individual pet. If they're just really struggling with the transition, we really need to pick apart what's going on for that individual.
One thing that I see is that pet parents run to the vet pretty quickly to get something to stop the diarrhea. What do you think about doing that versus just allowing them to have runny stools for 3 or 4 days, get it out? What's the stopping point in your mind that says, okay, look, we got to stop this now. We've got to go to the vet and we're going to get this metronidazole. What do you think about that?
Well, metronidazole is an antibiotic, and it's a very strong antibiotic. It actually has a narrow safety range as far as dosage. So it's far from benign. The reason it helps, I think, with diarrhea. So what happens when you have a diarrhea, a lot of times the gut microbiome, it gets out of balance. So you have, you know, the dog's detoxing or the gut's inflamed for whatever reason. And there's always bacteria in the gut that can cause disease, but they're in low enough populations that the good bacteria keep things balanced and under control. And then if those populations shift and the bacteria that can cause disease tend to overgrow, then sometimes treating with something like metronidazole will take down those populations and the diarrhea will resolve. And I've seen it many times, you know. I mean, I've had people come to me saying, look, I like to do things holistically, but the dogs, you know, pooping in my house can't deal with this. Can we just do the metronidazole, you know? And it usually works. So to answer the question, at what point would you go there? I would say if, you know, it's really becoming a management issue, you know, it's just stressing out the dogs having blowout diarrhea, just uncontrollable, you know, really making a mess in the house. If it's going on for more than say 4 or 5 days, that might be a time to intervene. If the pet's acting sick, like not wanting to eat, feeling so crummy that now they like don't even want to eat because their gut's all cramped up, then sometimes we need to intervene. But I usually, if I were to use metronidazole, and for me it would be a last resort. Like if a dog is having some loose stools and otherwise acting fine, they're out playing, wanting to go for walks, eating, they just have, you know, loose poops, they're able to reasonably control it though, they're not having accidents in the house, then you just let them ride it out and let it, you know, let the microbiome, because I think it's much better to let the microbiome rebalance itself, because it will, and then we have a healthy microbiome. By intervening, you're still kind of throwing things off, and it's going to ultimately take longer for the normal microbiome to reestablish itself. And I wanted to say one thing too about Clostridium, because I see this all the time. Pet has diarrhea, take a stool sample in, they're told, oh, we have Clostridium, we need to put them on antibiotics. Clostridium is a normal overgrowth. So just what I was saying, where you get, when the gut's out of balance, you'll get certain bacteria that tend to grow. And Clostridium is one of those. I don't think when we see like more than normal Clostridium in a stool sample, that's not the primary problem. That's what ends up getting treated with antibiotics. The primary problem is that the gut's out of balance. And even if we see that overgrowth, again, we look at how the pet's doing. If they have good energy and they're still eating, we can still allow that process to ride out. Give the body a chance to heal itself. The body knows what to do when we support it properly. This is the whole premise of how I practice. The body knows what to do. And the more we keep intervening and throwing medications at it and trying to fix the problem, resolve symptoms, I think a lot of times we do more harm than good. And it's much more effective in the long run to naturally support the body, let it figure things out. Like I said, Mother Nature's got it down. You know, it's us humans that really get involved and tend to screw things up.
Yeah, I have a customer who said, and she hasn't been feeding raw for a while, so I'm not sure what she's been feeding. Not our raw, but she said that her dog has Clostridium, right? And that the dog's very sick. So now she's wanting some green tripe. But what she said was interesting because she said, I took him into the vet, and the vets are saying that they're seeing an enormous amount of Clostridium right now, which is funny because isn't it just in our soil too?
Oh yeah. It's everywhere. It's like I said, it's a normal inhabitant in the digestive tract. It's not an infectious disease, which is kind of how it's thought about. It's a normal inhabitant in the environment. And it's again about a balance. So, what being said that way, like they're seeing a lot of Clostridium, we have a lot of dogs with messed up microbiomes, probably from eating kibble. If that's what, you know, that's what they're seeing. That's how I would interpret that comment.
Right. And also if you look at, I mean, there's like a ton of strains of it. I mean, and I don't even know what damage. Okay. So you do a fecal. Right? You have to do a fecal to find out if your dog has Clostridium, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So first we got to do a fecal. Then we find out we have Clostridium. Then don't we need to know kind of how much? And is there a benchmark? Again, it's sort of like the salmonella thing. What is the benchmark in a veterinarian's office that would say this dog has an overgrowth of this particular bacteria that in fact is causing this issue? How would you know that? How would you determine it?
Well, and that's the thing, is that this type of testing is very subjective. And like you said, they're not identifying strains or anything like that. They look at it under the microscope, and Clostridium is very distinctive looking little bacteria. So when you look at the fecal sample under the microscope, you can see them, but it's very subjective. So when this information comes out, most likely it's because whoever's reading the fecal, looking at the fecal sample under the microscope, says, wow, this is more Clostridium than I normally see. But it's very subjective. And based on that person's, you know, experience and what they're used to seeing, The other thing about fecal samples is you are checking a minute portion of the dog's stool. And it's not that you can't gain valuable information, but you're just looking at a fraction, you know, of what that dog is producing. So you could get a sample that's higher than the rest of the stool, or, you know, just at that point in time, the dog is shedding more Clostridium. Again, I think it's a sign that we have an imbalance in the gut, and not that, you know, we have some infectious disease. You know, conventional medicine, the thought paradigm always seems to be, well, we need to put a name, you know, pet comes in sick, we need to put a name to it, and we need to give it a treatment, because that's what the mindset is, that's what people are looking for. And I think a lot of people are looking for that. Most people don't really want to hear, yeah, I realize that your dog is not acting normally, but we're going to give it a few days and allow its body to sort this out. I think most people have this expectation that they go in, they want to walk out the door with a medicine that's going to make their pet better. And I think that's an important shift that pet parents need to make, that maybe we just need to give this a little time. And I would encourage people to look at themselves. I mean, when you get a cough, do you run into the doctor? I mean, maybe some people do. But most people get a cough or a cold, you just wait it out. Like, yeah, I got a cold. I'm going to be sick, going to feel crummy for 10 days, and it'll go away. But when their pet gets sick, their pet coughs or their pet sneezes, man, they are in the vet, like, within 24 hours. You know, make the stop. You get a little tummy ache, you're like, yeah, probably was that pizza I ate last night or something, you know, that threw me off, or I went out to eat and maybe something just didn't agree with me. And then you just, you give it a few days. And that's the way a lot of people treat themselves with their pet. They run right in there. And I think veterinarians now on the conventional side feel that there's that expectation that they want a diagnosis. So we got to put a name to it and we got to give them a medicine to fix it. And I think if pet parents would step back and look at things a little differently and, you know, realize that maybe we just need to give things a little tincture of time, the old saying, that, and, you know, not that we want to be careful that pets don't get more seriously ill, but, you know, a lot of things we can allow to ride out on their own. Because again, the more we keep interfering, the more medicines we keep throwing at the pets, we're disrupting the natural processes in the body, and ultimately they're going to be sicker in the long run.
Right. And I think this is the problem, that pet parents just don't know what to ask. They have no idea. They don't know whether this is something, this bacterial overgrowth is going to be serious or if it's going to pass. I mean, if you look at Clostridium, you know, it's not typically caused by the bacteria, this illness directly, but rather by a toxin produced by the bacteria, right? So only certain strains,
yeah, right.
Only certain strains are able to produce this intestinal toxin that causes illness, and only certain dogs are affected. So it's not as if you can just say, okay, Clostridium, terrible dogs, you know, in bad shape, blah, 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 blah. I mean, there's so much more that goes with it. And I don't know what the proper thing would be to ask a vet. Okay. I just had a fecal, comes back. Yes. There's Clostridium. What would be the next thing if you took your dog in, Dr. Jasek, and you weren't a vet, but you are, what would you ask? What would be that next question that you would ask the vet if that is what they came back and said, well, this is why your dog has, you know, diarrhea?
I think maybe I'd ask, how do you know? I mean, how do you know that this is the cause of the diarrhea? And, you know, and then the other probably big question would be, okay, so we're going to put the dog on antibiotics. I know that I want my dog to have a healthy microbiome, and what effect are those antibiotics going to have on the good bacteria? And are we going to be throwing the gut more out of balance? What are the side effects of the treatment? Because the treatment, you could say, okay, this treatment might eliminate the Clostridia, but what is it doing, you know, to the other bacteria in the gut? And I think that would be the biggest question, because I think that's the biggest problem. Well, and then I guess the other question would be, so how did this happen? Now, unfortunately, if they were feeding raw, they would probably be told that because they were feeding raw food, because it gets blamed for everything, right? But that would be the other question. Like, okay, so we're going to give this medicine that's going to eliminate the Clostridia, but how did this happen in the first place, and how can we keep it from happening in the future, and see what kind of answers you get. Unfortunately, I think that a lot of conventional vets would say that the antibiotics would not cause a problem with the microbiome, because I don't know that that is, you know, common knowledge or commonly recognized information on the more conventional side. So I think you also have to be a little careful about the answers that you get to that question. You know, another thing about the Clostridium is in people, they get a specific strain, they call C. diff, or Clostridium difficile is the strain, and it can make people very, very, very sick. And people, I mean, they will treat with the most high power, best antibiotics, and they cannot eliminate it. But you know what they have found cures people of that?
Coffee.
Being a fecal transplant.
Oh,
yeah. They're like, darn it. No, it's actually fecal transplants. And this is where they actually literally do a poop enema. So you actually take stool from a healthy person and you make a slurry and you do an enema with it. And so you're basically replenishing the microbiome. But it, to me, this just drives home the point that all the antibiotics in the world don't necessarily even get rid of the organism that's the problem. Even if it is a very toxic strain, it's rebalancing the microbiome because all of those high power antibiotics have wiped out the natural microbiome in those individuals, and they keep getting sicker and sicker and sicker and more antibiotics, and they're just getting sicker because their microbiome is so out of balance. And then they give them good bacteria and they get better. And to me, that just speaks volumes for the importance of looking at rebalancing the microbiome rather than just, you know, throwing antibiotics at the situation.
Right. And I do know there's some companies out there that do fecal transplants. Do you do those?
Yeah, I've done them. The key with the transplant is finding good donors. So you want dogs that are, what I look for, dogs that are fed raw, are healthy. You know, they have consistently good normal poops. They have healthy skin. They're not inflamed in any way. So they're not itchy skin dogs or dogs that tend to have, you know, loose stools off and on, good energy, good dispositions. So I've actually read reports about doing this in animals where, because the microbiome contains a huge amount of genetic material, more than all the rest of our DNA combined. There's more DNA in our microbiome. And so I've actually heard reports of dogs' personalities changing when a fecal transplant is done. So you need a really good healthy donor, no medications. At least recently or throughout their life, they've been healthy. They haven't needed to be treated, very minimally vaccinated. So you need a really good healthy donor. And then it really is a poop enema. Like I do an ozone treatment first. I do a rectal ozone because you're oxygenating the colon. So you're creating this really nice, healthy environment for these new bacteria. And then you prepare the donor stool to make like a slurry out of it. And then you just put it up in there. So you use like a little catheter and a syringe and just allow the new bacteria to colonize. So it's not, you know, it's not rocket science, but the important thing is getting a good donor and people, from what I understand. The FDA actually has approved this as a treatment for C. diff. It's not approved for anything else. Not that FDA approval means that much, but they've actually approved it because they'll get to where they can't treat these people and people die from this because they've so messed up their gut. And I think it's a vicious cycle. They diagnose this and they keep pumping more and more and more and more antibiotics until they're so sick that they can't recover on their own. But from what I understand, they charge like $10,000 or $12,000 or something like that. It's pretty astronomical what they charge in people. But yeah, it absolutely can be done. And I think it's not something that I jump right into for dogs that, you know, maybe had just intractable diseases that, you know, just we're not getting on top of chronic gut disease or even chronic skin disease. I think it may be a viable treatment, but it is, you know, we're changing you know, the DNA in the animal. You know, it's a big shift. I think it's not something to be taken lightly, but I think for, you know, a chronic inflammatory disease that it may be worth, it may be worth doing. And there's companies now that have, you know, supplements in dried form that you can take, or that you can give your pet, that also helps replenish, you know, that microbiome. And that, you know, I think it's a very individual thing. You know, the microbiome is unique to each individual. So I think that's the other tricky part is, how do you know, even though you're picking a good donor, is that microbiome going to be appropriate for this other individual and resolve their issues? You know, you really don't know that until you give it a try, because this, there's, like I said, there's a lot of genetic material, and you're going to get a you know, a lot of difference in the response from individual to individual.
Right. It's a little bit, it's a little complicated, but here's the thing, pet parents, and my fantastic listeners out there, you have an advocate, in Dr. Judy Jasek. You can contact her from any part of the country. You can go to her website, cancer-vet.com, and talk to her. You know, it's, I know that some of you are like, well, my vet said this and I'm confused and I don't know what to do and I don't know if this is the best treatment. I think that always getting a second opinion, especially if you are a raw feeder, which I assume that most of you that are listening to this podcast are, or considering being a raw feeder. And the knowledge base is vastly different in holistic whole body treatment versus traditional treatment. And I think what our aim is to give your dog the best chance of healing itself and not adding things to the dog's body that are going to hurt the microbiome. And what does that mean when you hurt the microbiome? Well, you don't, your dog is not able to fight off infections or disease or toxins, because we've got this compromised gut. And if you've learned anything from this podcast, it is that the gut is what determines how healthy your dog is. And that is why we say friends don't let friends feed kibble, because there ain't nothing in that kibble that is good for your gut. I don't know how to get that through to people any better than that. I mean, I still have calls, and I assume these people haven't listened to the podcast too much, but I still have calls where there's something going on, they're going through the transition, and the question is, all right, I'm feeding kibble and raw, should I take them off raw? And no, yeah, right. Take them off kibble. Have you read Dr. Judy Jasek's newest blog, Kibble versus Raw? If you haven't, it's on my website. It's on Dr. Judy's website. So anyway, that's just something that we are doing here. I hope that this is helpful. What we want you to do is ask more questions. Go out there, do more research. Don't just blindly follow the sheeple off of the cliff, okay? Because we like you. We'd like for you to stay around. Okay, Dr. Judy, that's a wrap for today. And you know what I'm going to go do? I'm going to go
have a cup of coffee.
That's right. I'm going to go get another cup of coffee. And so hopefully I can speak the rest of the day. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you soon on the Raw Dog Food Truth.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.